So we'll get started. This is the panel on podcasting for the speculative fiction author, or will the revolution be recorded? And we will talk a little bit about what this panel is about in a moment, but I will get introductions out of the way first. So I'll start. I'll begin on the right, Alex.
My name is Alexander Yablokov. My most recent book, Brain Thief, will be out in paperback in October. And I have a new book. One of my older books is up on Audible and ACX. A fan called me up and asked if he could do it, and he did a very nice job on it. It's cool. Called Nimbus.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Mike Allen. I wear a lot of different hats. And I need to get something sort of obligatory out of the way. Among the things I do, I am the editor of an anthology series called Clockwork Phoenix. We debuted the first three volumes here at ReaderCon. I have a Kickstarter that I have launched to try to create a fourth volume. It has a $5,000 goal. We launched it on Tuesday. We are just shy of $2,500 as of this morning, so I feel very encouraged. If anyone wants to talk to me about that, you can do so afterward. My actual connection to this panel, I guess the hat that I wear, is I've done a fair amount of podcasting for other sites. I have been a kind of pinch hit podcast reader for Clark's World magazine, and I also have been a narrator for Starship Sofa, the Hugo Award winning audio fanzine based out of Scotland from Tony C. Smith, and Starship Sofa now has a sister podcast site called Tales to Terrify. And because I write a lot of horror, and in fact the stories Tony has run by me have been horror stories, he asked me to start doing a regular column for him for Tales to Terrify. Doing a monthly audio column is kind of an interesting experience. But anyway, I do all those things, and I guess that's why I'm here.
Cool. Jim?
I am Jim Freund. I have never done a podcast in my life. However, I've been host and producer of a radio program in New York City for, God help me, 40 and a half years. I've been producing radio for 45 years. The answer to the next question is I was 13. And I have flyers for it. I am, however, trying to not convert the show, but enhance the show with a podcast, which will be slightly different than the actual broadcast. The broadcast does stream live. It is available for 2 weeks after broadcast. But I think that my main asset to this panel is that, well, I know broadcasting equipment. I know how to use the darn thing. I know, even though it is a broadcast, and for that matter, mostly a live broadcast, I know content. So I know the whys and the wherefores of audio journalism, and so I guess that brings me there. I'm also a producer and curator of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which I have 21 years of that and the KGB Fantastic Fiction Readings, which I don't produce, but I record and broadcast anyway. And building all that up, if not to be a podcast, I'm also filming them, so I'm podcasting and YouTubing it.
He also knows about 95% of the people at this convention, by the way, because he's interviewed a lot of them. Claire.
That's true.
I'm Claire. I write under CSE Cooney. My background is in both theater and fiction writing, so when I first heard about podcasts, it was very exciting. I interviewed the podcastle editors for Blackgate magazine because I love them so much. I listen to them while I do dishes. And when my novella came out with Papaveria Press, I asked the editor if I could do a sort of do-it-yourself audiobook version, and asked my brother, who's a musician, to sort of do like songs that would go in between sections. So we've experimented. We don't know a lot what we're doing, but I just find the whole do-it-yourself podcast culture really exciting, and also when it mixes with the expertise in, of radio and where it all might go. It's just lovely.
Very cool. My name is Gregory Wilson. I'm an associate professor of English at St. John's University in Queens. Excuse me. And I teach courses in fantasy and science fiction and creative writing, among others. I'm also a writer. My first novel came out a few years ago. I have the next two are being shopped. A short story coming out in an anthology, When the Villain Comes Home, with some people, one of whom is in the audience, next month. And I've also written articles for the CIFWA Bulletin, including one on podcasting, which I'll talk about in a second. I am also co-editing an anthology on speculative fiction and politics with some of the writers who are here. And so that's the sort of general thing. And the connection to this is, I proposed this panel. The title is, in fact, taken from an article that I wrote for the CIFWA Bulletin. And in a horrible example of repeated interconnection, incestuous relationships, it came out of a talk that I did here last year on networking, which itself came from a CIFWA Bulletin article. So at some point, this recursive loop is going to collapse. But in any case, I did a talk on networking for the speculative fiction author last year. And one of the things that I got the most interest and attention in was my work in podcasting. I have run three to this point. One was a major, no, major, minimum, mid-list, is there a mid-list podcast? Which was called The Mep Report. It was a comedy show. I also did a review show called Upon Further Review, and I reviewed James Patrick Kelly for that show, whom I met at ReaderCon. And then the one I do now with fellow speculative fiction author Brad Bollier is called Speculate. The podcast for writers, readers, and fans has been running for about a year and a half and interviews authors, editors, artists in the speculative fiction community. We have had Brandon Sanderson and Kish Johnson and Brent Weeks and Ian McDonald, and just finished Ian Tregillis, and are going to be starting a show with Saladin Ahmed next week. And so we have reviewed a lot and interviewed a lot of people, and are starting to get some notice even on Hugo Ballots and the like, for which we are most grateful. And so if you want to find out more about that, you can go to speculatesf.com. But the reason that I wanted to do this panel, and I'm really glad to hear the different perspectives that we're coming from, because I think that's great, is because there was a lot of discussion of different podcasts that exist. I personally am less interested in talking about that because I think it's been done before. What I heard from people who were coming here to these things was they wanted to know more about the how. Well, how do you go about getting started in podcasting? What sort of things do you have to do? What shows could you make, you know, in this brave new world of podcasting? What kind of stuff could you do? And so what I want to do is I want to throw out a few questions to the panel that will sort of lead us in that direction. And talking, you know, focusing it on how authors in our genre can get benefits from themselves being involved in podcasting to some degree. So I want to start by throwing that question out, which is, what value have podcasts had for you? Whether it's someone recording your work and putting it on podcast, which is what you described, Alex, or whether it's actually working in it and doing recordings yourself, or whether it's having not a podcast background but a radio, 45-year radio, you know, background, Jim, or whether it's actually doing podcasts yourself and being fascinated in the process. What has it been like for you to get involved in podcasts? What value have you gotten out of it as a speculative fiction author? And I'll throw that out. I can go the same direction if we like.
Well, we don't have to go, and
doesn't have to be in
just
order.
Just to kind of blow my gap, I'm kind of an odd person to have. I think they put me on this panel because I'm interested in the topic, not that I have a huge amount to say, not that that will stop me from talking, because I guess that's what podcasting is all about.
Right.
You can't shut
absolutely
up, and so the people you know have stopped listening to you, so you shoot it out. I just find it an interesting... I'm not a very... oral person. I'm a text person. Mm-hmm. And so listening to books, you know, it's a very different, you get a totally different thing, yeah, out of them. I was sick recently and I had to lie face down for a good part of a month. So that's when I started listening to audiobooks. You know, there was really a lot to do. And it's harder than it looks. To make it, I think that's part of what I would bring to it, is it's not just reading. You really, when you're stuck with someone for 18 hours or something, it's different than,
yep,
just reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do what Alan Kushner did in the previous thing and, you know, add voices and music and everything else. But you really have to think about what you're bringing. Actually, my favorite one was the Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Junot Diaz. The reader of that was really, really good.
Okay.
So I would recommend that. I'm not going to say the ones I didn't like, but sometimes it was the author's fault, so you can't blame your reader.
Okay.
Thinking about your question, I think, you know, to some degree I'm doing it just because I like doing it.
Okay.
But, I mean, in terms of any advantage it's given me as a writer, it's very simply reaching a different audience than what I would normally reach. And I feel the need to add, I've also had my work adapted in, you know, podcast and pseudopod that Claire was mentioning. And that's a somewhat different experience because you're submitting your work to someone else's interpretation as mm-hmm. opposed to completely controlling it yourself. And it's been interesting to me. This hasn't happened so much with Starship Sofa. Starship Sofa has a huge listening audience, but they don't get a lot of feedback. With Podcastle and Pseudopod and that group, and they're a very different group from what Tony does with Starship Sofa, there's immediate audience feedback mm-hmm. that is fascinating and sometimes really caustic. so you have to be ready to brace yourself, but once you kind of get past that, it's a lot of fun. And it's a different experience overall, I think, because a lot of us writers, we sort of put our work out there, or it gets put out there, and unless you're a really big name, feedback is relatively fleeting. But it's not so with that venue,
right?
You know, they come back at you right away. So that's been a fascinating part of it, and another part of it, I suppose, is just kind of developing the skill of doing it for mm-hmm. its own sake. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think a recording I do now is, you know, I can definitely tell an improvement of it from when I was first starting out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, maybe now is not the time to go into techniques, but that might be something down the road.
Okay. Okay. Jim, why do you want to enhance the radio show into the podcast form?
I will not say that radio is passé, because it is not. In fact, more people are listening to radio now, largely because of the internet and podcasting than anything else. But also, it's about the time delay factor. I mean, when I'm broadcasting, I'm usually broadcasting in the middle of the night. Even though my show is available, we could hear it right now, still the idea of a podcast, of making it available anytime in a more concise, a more edited form, mm-hmm. it's a different kind of a thing. Now, the radio show, there's feedback. You get listener phone calls. Hmm. You know, there's no two ways about that. And there are also different basic forms. There's the interview show. There's the reading. There's the live radio drama. Mm-hmm. And the why do I do it? I don't have to wait online for autographs. I get them then and there. That's the initial. There's also the two different perspectives. When I started the show, being pretty young when I was doing it, the show was founded by Margot Adler, who now co-produces some, I don't know, it's called All Things Considered.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she wants to slum with those people. Let her. She, unknown thing about those who are familiar with Adler and what she does on NPR, is the reason I got the show. I was her engineer, and twice a week, she was doing it 5 days a week, her co-host. She went to Clarion. She never wrote, damn it, but she went to Clarion. So when she went away to Clarion, I took over, and I'm not giving it back. But when I started the show, it was Spanish. It was, I just got back from, you know, Torcon, and let me tell you, the dumplings in Toronto, I mean, it was really Spanish talk. And, you know, Chip Delaney was there, and John Singer and all that. After a certain while, I began to realize I'm broadcasting to cab drivers. Podcasts are broadcasting to the cognoscenti of science fiction, to the people who are in this room and who are aware of the genre and the media. I have got to remember that when somebody comes on and says, well, I got a Hugo nomination, this does not refer to a Martin Scorsese film, which is the first thing that a listener might wonder, what is that about?
Right.
So I am broadcasting. Why do I want to podcast? I want to do a little, also narrow casting.
Yep.
A little better term, niche, targeted.
Targeted, I like that.
Targeted.
Targeted.
Better word.
Claire, what about you?
Well, there's so many ways, like, for example, podcasts will only take pieces generally that have been published already. So as a writer, it's a way to get paid an extra $100 for a story you might have gotten paid $100 for, which is, you know.
It's a good reason.
Yeah, that's one reason to do that. Another reason is, as a listener, when, you know, audiobooks first started becoming more of a thing you did, I started listening to them more, and I had huge tasks I would need to do that were so boring and mind-dulling, I would task avoid, and then found myself, with this audiobook or now podcasts, just wanting more of tasks to do so I would have an excuse to listen, to be told stories. And then as a performer, focusing on writing now as an adult and not being able to do the theater that I really love to do, it's just, it was a way to be able to perform again, and whether or not anybody ever listens is me and my blue snowball microphone, but it was gratifying to be alone with a microphone in a room. And then otherwise, to hear my own work reinterpreted was fascinating, and thinking, I never would have thought of that. To be part of a collaboration on any wider scale was exciting. And also, I have friends who tell me, I have no time to read anymore, but all that their reading time goes into their car drives. So they gather all the podcasts that they like, and that's when they do what they call reading these days, because that's the time allotted them. And if that's where they're getting it, that's where I want to go too.
I think, and a lot of that sort of ties into to reasons that I do it also. It's exposure in part. For me, now I don't do a podcast in which I'm reading my own stuff. I'm, you know, a professional working writer and a college professor, and I'm doing this podcast. It was not just a labor of love, in fairness. It was also because I was getting to connect with Brandon Sanderson, Kish Johnson, you know, all these people that I've mentioned, which had, you know, benefits on practical levels. It also had benefits on levels of learning. You know, any teacher will tell you that the best way to learn more about your field is to teach it. And the best way to learn more about your field in a way is to interview the luminaries within that field. And so, you know, one of the things we've talked a lot about, sort of readings being committed to the podcast format, which is one way to do it. But there are obviously many other podcast forms. You have the sort of standard interview show, which is the kind of thing that Jim has done on radio for many years, in which you're, you know, interviewing people, which is what we do a little bit of on Speculate as well. But our standard model is to do what we call a triptych of shows, where we'll have a particular book that we want to focus on, generally modern work. So the next week we're going to be starting Throne of the Crescent Moon by Saladin Ahmed, for example, which is coming out from Daw. Very good book, by the way. The first show is a reader response show. And it's basically about 35 to 40 minutes. We'll talk about, you know, lengths of show in a moment, a little bit later, I hope. But it'll be about 35 to 40 minutes in which we talk about the things that really connected to us or didn't, although we try to focus on the things that do connect with us as readers. The second show will be an interview with that author, and we've been lucky enough that we have enough contacts in the industry that we can pretty much always get the author, sometimes the author and editor, which is really cool. We did a PA triptych on the Book of Cthulhu, which came out from Nightshade, was edited by Ross Lockhart. So we got a chance to interview John Honor Jacobs, Laird Barron, and Ross Lockhart, the editor. So that was cool because you're getting it from different perspectives. We've interviewed Jonathan Strahan as well, and then Michael Swanwick and James Patrick Kelly. So we were able to sort of get those perspectives on why they produced this work and what it was like for them writing it and or editing it. And then the third show, which in some ways is Brad's and my favorite show because it means we get to talk shop, is we talk about the writing techniques. Some writing techniques that were used in the course of that show, which is interesting, hopefully, not only to aspiring authors, but also to readers who want to know, sort of at a deeper level, more about some of the material and information that's going into the books that they love. One of the great benefits of podcasts is the fact that you have that sort of freedom, something which wouldn't be allotted you, which would say, well, you can do an interview show, even on NPR, say, you can do an interview and you can take, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, that sort of thing. But going farther into depth about all of this material, maybe you'll get one of those, you know, human interest type stories once in a while, but certainly not as a steady diet. And so we almost get an opportunity to do a sort of our own version of Inside the Actor's Studio, I guess, but where we go on and say, now let's talk about the acting, you know, and what was actually going on from a technique point of view. So there are other versions of shows that are out there, which has been helpful to me as a writer and also to me as a professor as well, so it's been very beneficial in that regard. So I want to ask, actually, in relation to that, let me follow up with that to ask a little bit about, let's say, and those of you who don't have the direct experience, I think, can still talk about what it was like hearing your work for the first time, for example. What sort of show, assuming that the benefits are learning, exposure, having your material saved for, you know, future generations, whatever the reasons may be, what kinds of shows, if we were just starting out doing it, what kinds of shows would we suggest an aspiring speculative fiction author try to do? Should it be trying to focus on recordings of their own work? Should it be, you know, doing other people's work? What kind of stuff would be useful in that regard? And I'm not going to go in order. That's for whoever likes.
I specialize in the author's voice.
Okay.
I specialize, with all due respect, because I will listen to great readers do other people's work. And, by the way, I do a lot of reading. When I started the show, I was doing a lot of reading of other people's work live, God help me, on the air. And the... But I was also, mind you, not exactly... It's a daily show. Not getting permission. And, well, it was on at 5 a.m. And here's a new short story by Gregory Wills, or better yet, a story from Clockwork Phoenix. I want you to buy this book and let me give you an example of a story that's in it. Now, we're talking 5 a.m., and it's a transitory broadcast, and 7 a.m., the sun is up, the show is over, it will never be there again. I don't do this anymore because there's the internet. My shows are now forever. That would harm somebody's audio rights. That would harm their ability to sell to Audible.com or
right.
something. Unless, so now, I'm more of an advocate of having recorded Mike Allen doing a Clockwork Phoenix, was it 2 years ago, reading? 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Well, we did one all 3 years. With the,
oh, okay.
The one that Barbara was in was.
Well, I've recorded two out of the 3 years. And I've broadcast 2 out of the 3 years those stories
awesome.
That could be broadcast without getting the FCC on me.
Awesome.
So that was like 5 minutes. So that was 3 minutes long.
I've never even thought about FCC rules applied to Clockwork Phoenix. That's fascinating.
It's important.
Yeah.
But an interesting point is, now that we're internet, Safe Harbor in New York is not Safe Harbor in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
They never think about that one. But anyway... So I'm an advocate of getting the events at ReaderCon. I've recorded 3 readings here already and 2 interviews. And having the writers read their own work. I also conduct workshops with writers on how to read your own work and do it well using techniques from performers. And like that, I've also produced a little theater, so I know a wee bit about that. So I advocate, as producer of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, in which we have 2 writers a month read, and as somebody who hosts writers, I like people like Alex to come on the show and read, preferably live, but I'll take it on recording.
Other thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I was trying to... I had a jumble of thoughts, and I'm trying to unroll. That's all right.
I jumbled.
That's fine. That's fine. No, you didn't do it. I did it all on my own. I think I'd have to come down on, you know, I don't know if every writer can do justice to their own work vocally, but I encourage everybody to try it, certainly. And I think there are venues where you can probably break in pretty quickly and decide, you know, decide whether or not this is something that you can do. I've mentioned Starship Sofa a couple of times. You know, Tony has a Hugo, but that does not mean that he is difficult to approach in any way. I mean, the way I became part of Starship Sofa is I just contacted him. I heard about him, and I contacted him out of the blue and said, "Hey, would you like some work for me?" He's like, "Sure." So, you know, that's an option you have. If you want, you know, Starship Sofa at gmail.com. You can contact Tony, say, "Hi, I am a science fiction writer. I have written this. I'd like to make a recording of it. Are you interested?" And, you know, then you know, that's one way to get started. I feel like it's kind of important to have some sort of venue to put it out through, just because, you know, self-promotion on the internet can be difficult.
Yes.
if you don't have some help. You know, I guess Claire has a real theater background. I have kind of a fake theater background. you can probably tell we both have these voices that carry out. And, you know, so it's you know, Jim obviously has got some of that going on, too. It's sort of logical for us to be recording ourselves and putting it out there. Claire's actually been on... You've been on Starship Sofa, too, haven't you?
Yeah. The thing is about with podcasts right now, or starting and breaking in, is that you... are alone doing it, and then you send it in an email file or some kind of Dropbox, and then they have it. But you have no director or producer as your third ear, I guess it would be, in radio, to say you have to slow down or, you know, breathe more. And especially when you're so excited and you talk faster and faster. And it, so I think that there are different levels of podcasting, that right from the do-it-yourself to, like, definitely more professional levels, and you'd have to be pretty self-motivated in order to keep improving your own performance. You'd have to decide to take those classes, or, you know, try to find workshops somewhere. And I think that would be the difficult. I would love to do more of it, but it's like you do what you can in isolation while you have your job that you're holding down and trying to actually write at the same time.
Well, one of the things...
Right. That, too. Because I have friends who spend all their time promoting... I have a friend who hasn't finished a book, and he keeps talking... Every time I have a beer with him, it's about, I did this, I have so many followers, I have... Well, how's the book? Oh, yeah, well...
Right. Something funny happened on the way to the computer, right? Yeah, it's true, and it is actually one of the big dangers of podcasting, like anything else, is that it can distract you from what is, for many of us, the primary job, which is to continue to write and produce material. And so there is a danger in that, as there is in anything else. The other danger, and I think that, Claire, your point about this is very important, podcasts that you produce are as much a reflection of you as anything else you do. That includes the way that you do, for example, on panels. You know, people here, you will all know, having been in audiences and some of you on panels yourselves, you will know the experience of watching people who are comfortable and friendly and know what they're doing and seem to have some sense of some, you know, time limits and direction and all that sort of thing. So we feel like someone's captaining the ship, right? You've all had the experience of that, and you've had the other experience where it's all kind of, you know, every person for him or herself. And that's not a pleasant experience, and it doesn't reflect on you well as an author. Same thing applies in podcasting. There is a danger, because you are in isolation, to think every thought I have is just as important as every last thought, and why would I edit these thoughts? And just as that is death if you try to put the work on the printed page, any author will tell you, any author who's being honest with him or herself will tell you that, you know, when you produce work, you need to edit it. It is not just, it does not spring from your, you know, brain onto the page and is, you know, deathless prose. Quite the opposite, often, until you've had a chance to have it edited. The same thing applies in the podcasting world. And so when you can reflect the kind of professional demeanor, that has benefits all over the place, and it shows that you take it seriously. So,
unless you're Tony.
Well, for the Scottish, that's a different, you know, rubric. I think one of the things to keep in mind then is that how you choose to go about your podcast is important. And just a few sort of basic concepts. One, knowing at the very beginning what sort of show you want to do. Do you want to do a show that involves reading your own work? Do you want to do a show that involves reading others' work? Do you want to do a show and doing interviews and so forth? All of those things are things that you should have a good idea of in advance. Do you want to do a hybrid show? What is the limit of your show going to be? That is extremely important. One of the things in the heady early days of the internet, when I started podcasting, the early days of podcasting on the internet, back in 2003, 2004, when it had been around before then, but it really started to take off at that point, when Adam Curry, the former VJ for MTV, coined the term podcasting. Back at that time, the idea was, I have these buddies who we have a great time talking to each other, so let's just sit down and let's just spew it all out. And the result was spew. It was a lot of conversation that didn't really go anywhere, and it could be amusing, but it often went far too long. So what limits are you going to place on it? What kind of audio editing are you going to do to it? If your voice is too loud at some points and too soft at others, are you going to have some method of equalizing that so that it sounds pleasant to your listener and they're not riding, you know, if they're listening to this on the way to work, they're not riding the volume on the car, you know, connected to their iPod or whatever the case may be. Those are all things that you need to think about and stick to going forward, because if you don't take it seriously, then it will reflect as poorly on you as if you had produced some slipshod piece of writing and said, well, it's all my own thoughts, really. Podcasting, just because you have more control over it, does not abdicate your responsibility to be professional in how you produce it. So those are things to kind of, you know, keep in mind as well. Okay, so one more question that I want to throw out to the panel before we take a few questions from you and see what you folks are thinking as well. The shows that you like to listen to, or in your case, Alex, when you said that the person who did your work, you really liked the way that they spoke it, that they read it. Why? What is it about the stuff that you listen to that you appreciate, that the stuff that you think is good? Why is it good? What makes it good from an oral/content point of view?
Well, I have to say, a lot of the podcasts I listen to are not science fiction. I mean, it's actually, I would love to bring some of that in. Like, I like Econ Talk, which is a Russ Roberts show on economics, and he has sometimes quite abstruse characters on there. And he has the gift of, he's clearly read the book, he does it every week, and he's read the book, and he seems to know the book as well as the author does, sometimes better. Because obviously, I'm sure any of us have had the experience where someone talks to you about your work, and you can't quite remember, oh, was that that character, was it that other guy, and they know it all. Then they think, are you really the author, or are you some... And so what he gets at, and In Our Time, which is a British show where he has academics, which I love. It's the real gift of the interviewer in those, just like any other show, but those are very delineated, they're very sharp, is to find the essence of whatever it is. And often, unfortunately for the author, once the interviewer has done that, you maybe don't even have to read the book. You know, you've kind of got the talk that you can give at the next party you're at, or you know, in the bar, to sound like you've read the book. And for most of us, that's really as much as we need.
that's deeply depressing.
For the record, for those who don't know, In Our Time is a radio show, but you're getting the podcast.
But I always listen to it as a podcast.
But you know, it's the only way you get the BBC shows. Yeah. But it is the best.
Others? What makes the shows you listen to, podcasts specifically, good ones?
Well, I'm afraid my dirty little secret is that, you know, as I'm a writer and an editor, you know, just finished a novel, getting ready to launch a new anthology book, I don't have a commute to work. I only live about 5 minutes away.
This is a lead-in to you don't listen to many.
But
you do, though, Starship Sofa.
He puts them in the Dragon Naturally Speaking and reads them.
Yeah, that's true. You have it, right.
I mean, I guess, you know...
You're in a different plane there.
It seems to me that, I mean, what I have managed to listen to of all the different podcasts I participate in they have some very different approaches, but they all seem to have in common a nice balance between, you know, the dramatic music and the and the rich voices and basically I enjoy a podcast the same way I might enjoy a really good theater presentation.
Okay.
That's my cop out answer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a good one.
Yeah.
I'll follow up with you on one.
Sure.
What then are you conscious of when you're, is it just theatrical techniques? What are you conscious of when you're doing your readings and stuff?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on the story. If it's one of my own stories, of course, there's a way in which that's easier because I'm somewhat familiar with the words because they came from me to begin with. And I know...
Do you remember yours?
I understand, the inflection I had in mind with, mm-hmm. with this particular sentence or paragraph or whatever. When I'm reading another author's work, of course, I can only hear it the way I read it in my head.
Right.
I don't hear it in their voice, unless I happen to have heard it in their voice. And so the question then becomes for me, okay, is what I am doing, because podcasts are almost always recorded in this sort of last minute situation. What I am doing justice to this story? Is my own voice enough? Mm-hmm. Is there more that I need to do? I recorded Eric James Stone's That Leviathan Whom Thou Hast Made. It was a Nebula Award-winning novelette last year. I recorded that for Tony, and that has, it's very dialogue heavy. It's sort of like an episode of Next Generation Star Trek. And there are speech from these really alien creatures, and they're described in the text as, like one has kind of a one has kind of a neutral alto voice, and one has just this impossibly deep voice. And I thought, okay, well, why don't I see if I can make that effect? And I record using Audacity.
Mm-hmm.
I
guess, so do I.
Pretty universal, easy, free software. And Audacity lets you do that kind of thing. Now, of course, there's a danger in introducing sound effects that you're just going to go way over the top with it if you're
yes.
not careful. But
if you start seeing like reverse phasing, walk away. You don't need. Don't do that. Like the things that are way down in the plugin list.
I felt like this story needed that. That just relying on my own natural voice might carry the day, but it would do more for the listener if I really did sound alien speaking that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, it worked.
It worked.
There's a gentleman who compiles like the top 10 best podcasts from from Pseudopod and Starship Sofa, and that recording that I made was number one.
Woo-hoo.
So it worked. And there was a. Now I'm going to sound even more egotistical than normal. I did another one that was a horror story that was of my own, one of my own stories, and I also used special effects for that. And that was an interesting experience for me because it was a story that involved a lot of sort of flashbacks and internal monologue. And I started to think as I was reading it, I need to put some audio cues in here mm-hmm. at different points so that the listener kind of gets, okay, this is straightforward action. This is the screwed up, I almost said something else, the thing that's happening inside the narrator's head. And I went with that and in that instant used effects more as cues to help understand the story.
Yeah.
On top of just being sort of straightforward.
Which is a benefit to this medium. I'll tell a quick story.
And that came in number five.
That's cool. I'll tell a quick story. We just did episode 50 of Speculate, and we interviewed Ian Tregillis, who did the milkweed triptych he's in the middle of right now. And so he had his... was a little bit odd because The Coldest War, which is the middle book of the trilogy, came out in audio 5 or 6 months before the print version did, for reasons I won't get into. If you want to, listen to the episode, he said, and shamelessly. But in the process of doing that, he had always had in the back of his mind that the way you pronounce the word Eidolon, he thought in his mind was Eidolon, 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 Eidolon. So when he was listening to the narrator actually do it, it was Eidolon. And he thought to himself, my God, every time I was writing this, like, I can't believe he's not stumbling every time over the word, because the way I had it flowing in my head. He was reading it out loud wrong, because that's the way it sounded in his head. And it was this shocking revelation that this is not the way that anyone ever pronounced the word, ever. And authors will tell you that it affects the way that you write dialogue and characters, the way that it actually sounds. So that kind of, you know, things like that can...
Now, was the narrator pronouncing it right, or was...
The narrator was pronouncing it right, yeah.
Okay.
The author had been wrong. Ian had been wrong.
Wrong all these years.
Yes, see? So now you learn something new. Okay.
Well, you just hit upon another very stressful aspect of podcasting, which is oh my God, do I actually know how to pronounce this name?
Dictionary.com, which is a little speaker that will tell you how to pronounce it. But
very
even
useful.
Then, you still stumble.
I would like to dissent just a little bit on some of this, which is that radio drama is now about 80 years old. Mm-hmm. We know how to do cues. We know Foley sound effects. We know alien voices. Dimension X. X minus 1. Sure. This stuff has been around. Now, yeah, there's a difference between podcasts, but there's also a certain question of do it yourself.
Right.
And some of the podcasts that are going out there are doing brilliant, wonderful concepts. There may be the list of best podcasts, but go to sffaudio.com and listen to the best radio broadcast.
Sure.
Modern.net. Thank you. Jerry Stearns. Modern radio broadcasts. I'm not the only radio show. There's one in Minneapolis, one in... Okay. So you can produce theater. And this, I'm not talking even about what Ellen did. What Ellen is doing is dramatic reading. She's adding original music, actors, and all that. That's fine. But then there's also radio drama. And that... When you look at, and also, I don't record in Audacity. I record into microphones, into recorders.
Right.
I don't record into a computer because, frankly, they can't get the quality.
Oh, sure.
Analog is better than digital for a lot of this. And then you can produce digital, but you record analog. But both work, but then have the ultra-expensive equipment on... this is analog. This is $250, and will be better than recording into your computer. And they use here the Zoom H2s, same brand.
Oh, yep. Sure. I mean, that's one of the strange things about podcasting is it's very DIY. I mean, what I have is a $30 headset, free Audacity in my computer. That's how I do it. I'd love to have access to that kind of equipment.
Amazon.com, $200, $250.
All right, let's. I want to make sure. I'm sorry, Claire. I mean. Go ahead.
I just had a couple because I wanted to answer your question.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'll keep it short. When you said what makes a podcast worth listening,
yep.
There's a thing in theater that I noticed. I used to review theater, and mostly technologically, like a show is sound where everything has worked beautifully, the lights, the costumes, the everything, and the acting is great, and you don't notice anything particular because nothing is standing out. And then one day I saw a show where everything was great, and then the light was particularly brilliant. It became a kind of character. It was something more. And what I've noticed in podcasts I really like is that when the story by itself on the page was already brilliant, the narrator was already good, but by combining the two, you made something that was going to be twice as wonderful as
yep.
it could have been. Either it could have been alone, and that's my favorite kind of podcast. It takes something extraordinary as a kind of chemistry, and it doesn't always happen. Mostly, they're just really good, but the stuff that's extraordinary, I mean, there's not a definite formula to make that, but you know when it happens.
Yep.
The other thing I like about the podcast that I do like, I don't listen extensively. There's a couple nonfiction things, Savage Love, and some NPR things. But also, mostly I do Podcastle or Pseudopod or Escape Pod. And I love the introductions done by the producers and directors because they're already talking about a story in a way that I maybe wouldn't even have thought of it or chosen to analyze it that way. And it's almost like two people reading a story and then getting like together for coffee and saying, wasn't this awesome before you've even read it? So those are the three things I like.
Totally agree. I think that's all excellent points. I want to open it up for questions for people. And we know we're only scratching the surface. We know. We really are. But please, if any.
Do you have a question?
He said, sure.
So what would be your sort of first most important tips for somebody who's never done a podcast and who may want to record his or her own work?
I'll start. The first thing that I think is important is, number one, to listen to as many different kinds, not just in your field. And you don't have to listen to, you know, thousands of hours, but listen to as many different kinds of podcasts in and outside of your field and radio shows in and outside of your field, and basically see for yourself the same question I just asked these folks. What is it that you find most intriguing, interesting, engaging? When do those moments of kismet happen, when everything sort of connects together? So listening is really the first key, and seeing which of those shows grabs you as something you think, I'd like to do that. Again, I want to put in a plug for not just the reading, and you know that is also very valuable, or radio dramas, but also being able to do these hybrid shows like I talked about, where you do interview model and a writing discussion model, things like that. The second part is to, you have to start somewhere, and so starting to actually get your voice recorded and get used to it, because people will often find that when they record, they're like, oh my God, I hate the sound of my own voice. You know, everyone says something like that, and it sounds very different, you know, when you actually listen to it after the fact. And there's many, many ways to do that. If you go to, for example, one of the things that I do is I record all of the panels that I'm on at various conferences and conventions, not because I'm egotistical, maybe, I hope not, but mostly because I'm fascinated by what everyone has to say, and I want to hear how my voice from an oral point of view works alongside everyone else. So literally recording yourself. And then the last thing I would say, and this is the one bit of equipment, Jim knows much more about the equipment side, but I have a boom, I record at home, I have a boom mic with called an MXL550, it doesn't matter, I got it from Guitar Center. It was about, I would say about $95 or $100, but the most important to me, the most important piece of equipment that you need to have as a podcaster is a good input device, a microphone that will capture your voice properly. Because everything else, in a way, proceeds off of that. I mean, you have to have your own content, you're providing that. But you need to have a good microphone. And what, you know, Jim has here with Zoom is stuff that you can use to record live music in some cases. There are versions of that that do that as well. But the point is, you need to have the best possible input device, I think, that you can afford. Like, of all the budget money you allocate to this, most of it ought to go to that. Because everything else, Audacity, this program we've been talking about, is free. There are other free recorders that exist out there. There are other ways to sort of get your material recorded. But actually, the input device that gets you into the recording, that's the most important thing. So those are my three quick things.
Great.
Yeah, it's a very good point. eBay is a good one, and Guitar Center, I would put in a plug. They have sales all the time, and so that's another option as well. Yeah.
Having not shopped for a mic since, I got this on Monday, and I shopped well. I had a Zoom H4. This is the H4N, and I got this only because I wanted this to work with lavalier mics and things like that. What you see right there is a Zoom 8, right here, in front of this cable. That's a Zoom H2. That is great for two people talking, facing each other. I can also do that with this. An H1 is like a single person. The H1, which is great for one person talking or that interview format, is $80. That mic there, that's $125. This is $256. This is not a lot of money. This is broadcast quality. A 16 gig card, SD card inside here will cost you another $8. The whole setup you can do for high-end $350. Then you go to Audacity. Yeah. You take the output, you take the SD card out, you put it into Audacity, or here's a cool trick. Cool Edit Pro is also freeware, mm-hmm. and the reason I recommend that, Audacity is better. But the reason to use Cool Edit Pro is if you go to bbc.co.uk, they under radio, under journalism, they have a free 16-hour course in producing radio using Cool Edit Pro. After that, use the tool of your choice. but well, you can start with that.
By the way, one quick thing. That is the benefit of audio over video recording, because audio recording is just much cheaper to do. When you start video recording, prices shoot up exponentially. So we haven't talked at all about vidcasts, but podcasts have a big benefit that they're cheaper to produce.
And one thing also, you know, everything he said about content and all that, but also whatever equipment you use, whether you want to do a computer, whether you want to use, you know, a digital voice recorder.
$30, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. A higher end thing that can do that. I can put this out there. It gets the whole room. Very, very important. Go to where you're going to record. Turn your equipment on. Start recording. Do nothing. Record a minute of silence. Ooh. You hear that hum? Was that a refrigerator just going... Did birds pass by? Those will distract your podcast.
Yep. Yep.
And then read online or talk to me or something on how to deaden that noise. But before you record yourself, record your room.
I want to mention one thing, by the way. James Patrick Kelly recorded a number of his things. He was one of the big pioneers in getting his work up on Audible through Creative Commons license and the like. Sorry, Creative Commons license, and then also did work with Audible. But for a long time, and he may still do this, I don't know, Jim used to go into his closet that was filled with sweaters. And he would record all of his stuff because it was a perfect sound deadening, you know, option for him, and the way he did it was exactly as Jim described. He listened first. By the way, one important lesson, it is far, far easier to correct this stuff before you record it than after the fact. You can do, like, editing is such a pain anyway that having to do more of it by, you know, oh my God, why was that in the background? All that stuff is going on as well. We're being given the stop sign.
Stop!
So if you have other questions for us, I know we just scratched the surface, please come and ask us, and thank you all so much.